welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour, we have science fiction, later on from Lights Out from 1942. But first, a sci-fi story from X-1 called Junkyard, heard on NBC on February 22nd, 1956.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Junkyard, by Clifford D. Simak.
The funny thing about the whole thing was the fact that we had never intended to land on Planet 9. We circled it and decided it was strictly a low-grade affair. It wouldn't amount to anything for a billion years or so. As commander of a galactic survey team, I couldn't waste my time on it. Then my exec saw this junkyard through the telescope. We landed. Took a look at a load of alien machine parts discarded by some other spaceship and then prepared to take off for Earth. It had all been a waste of time.
Engine room, MacIver.
This is Commander Warren. All secure?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Countdown for blastoff.
Engine room ready, sir.
X minus 5. Minus 4. Minus 3. Minus 2. Minus 1. Fire. Mac, what's wrong down there?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Brady, get the data analyzer ready. We'll have to correct for a new takeoff time.
That's the first time I ever heard of engine failure before takeoff.
Well, better before than after. Engine room?
Yes, sir.
What's happening? You boys ready yet?
No, sir.
Well, burn it, man. Get going. I want those engines started.
Sir.
What is it?
I don't quite know what to say.
Well, say something or I'll have you busted.
We can't start the engines, Commander. At least I can.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
Klein, put Klein on.
Lieutenant Klein, sir.
Lieutenant, what is going on down there? Is there something wrong with the engines?
No, sir. I've double-checked them.
Well, then let's get them heated up or we'll be on this godforsaken planet the rest of our lives.
We can't do it, sir.
Klein, suppose you tell me exactly why you can't start the engines. Can you do that?
Yes, sir.
All right, why?
Because, sir, we can't remember how.
What?
Yes, sir. We've forgotten how to start the engines.
Lieutenant, report up here in 1 minute. Bring Dr. Spencer with you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brady, where have you got it?
Got what, Iron?
Don't play innocent. You and I have been doing planet surveys together for 15 years. You carry enough dead weight in grain alcohol on every trip to keep you happy for a million light years. Now, obviously, the boys in the engine room have gotten into it.
Impossible.
Where is it?
I got a few fists in my locker, but nobody's touched it. I checked a few minutes ago.
Well, then somebody has got some in the engine room. Come in.
Lieutenant Klein, sir, I brought Dr. Spencer as ordered.
Well, hello, Doc. Did Klein here tell you what's going on?
He did.
How long will it take you to get these guys sobered up?
I can't.
Why not?
Because they're not drunk. I tested Klein in my office.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Are you trying to get me to actually believe that these men, intergalactic engineers with years of hyperfission experience, have forgotten how to start the engines of this ship?
That's right.
You're serious?
Dead serious, Ira. Something, somehow, has caused these men to forget how to start the engines.
There it was. It fit in perfectly with a lot of other annoying little things that had been happening to us ever since we put down on Planet 9. It was to have been a routine exploration of a low-grade, uninhabited planet. Some routine exploration. All right, Klein, now listen to me. Do you have manuals aboard? Engineering manuals?
Yes, sir.
Take the engine room boys and study those manuals. They'll tell you how to start the ship, won't they?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going. Doc, I'd like you to stay here with me and Brady for a minute.
Okay.
Report back to me, Klein.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Doc, you're supposed to be an expert on space medicine. What is it?
I've never seen anything like it, Ira.
Brady?
Search me, Captain. I've seen them with space blues, alien psychoses, the works. But I've never seen a disease that could make a crew forget how to start the engines.
Maybe it isn't a disease.
Okay, what then?
Maybe it's a deliberate thing.
You mean they're faking?
No, I know Klein and the others too well for that. I mean, maybe there's some outside influence.
Doc, we've surveyed this planet from top to bottom. We know there isn't a living cell on it.
What about the junkyard?
What junkyard?
Oh, he means that pile of Rusty's space engine parts we found. The boys nicknamed it the junkyard.
He's right. Somebody put it there.
Well, we know that another spaceship landed here. We know that from the blast marks on the rock. We know that for some unexplained reason, they took their engine apart and tried to put it together again. We know they succeeded in building a much simpler engine, leaving a lot of spare parts, and we know that they took off. The blast-off marks tell us that, too.
What we don't know is whether or not they left somebody behind. Or something.
What about that stone tower, Ira?
The boys looked it over. It's just a pile of stones. They probably threw them together as a shelter while they were rebuilding their engine.
Oh, that sounds too simple.
I don't like that tower, Ira.
Why not?
I don't know. It was scary. It had that black look about it. The smell of death. I felt it when I walked past with Klein and MacIver.
Oh, that's the Celt in you, banshees and spooks.
I still don't like it. I need a drink.
Skip it. We should be ready to blast off in a few minutes. Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there? Engine room. Lieutenant Klein.
Daddy. Is that you, Daddy? Did you bring me a present? Daddy, I'm scared.
Holy mackerel, that's Klein. He's gone off his rocker. Klein! Doc, I think we better get down to that engine room. When Doc examined Klein, he found him to have the mind and memory of a 6-year-old.
That's it, Ira. Something drained Klein of his memory. And that's as much as I can tell you.
Well, that's a big help.
Here's the manual he was reading.
Well, at least we can follow this manual and get off this stinking planet. Could you hand it to me?
Right here. Anything wrong, Ira? Is it all there?
It's all here, Doc. This is the engine manual. It tells all about the engines. How they operate, how to locate trouble, how to fix them, how to start them.
Well, what is it then? You're sweating like a pig.
All of a sudden, I can't remember the symbols. Doc, I've forgotten how to read. I left the engine room and went out through the lock to stand on the outside platform of the ship. I looked over the junkyard where the metal of the rusted engine parts gleamed. There was a riddle there. A riddle we hadn't been able to figure out. Why had an alien spaceship landed here, ripped out its engines, and then put together a simple, less efficient engine, and taken off again? And they had worked in an awful hurry, judging by the mess they left. Why? Why?
Mind if I join you, Ira?
No, help yourself, Doc. How's Klein?
We've made him some toys. He's playing with them. I've assigned Mac to see that he doesn't hurt himself.
Doc.
Yes?
Have you got any ideas on what's happening to us?
Well, man experiences incidents, gathers knowledge, knows emotions. Then, as he grows older, he begins to forget those experiences, forget that knowledge. That's what life is, a long series of forgettings. Here, on 9, in some impossible way, the forgetting is speeded up. It happens overnight.
No, there's more to it than that. Well, I'm going back to my cabin and try to get some rest.
Is that you, Ira?
That's me, Batters.
What gives?
We're in a jam.
There's been planets I wouldn't mind being marooned on, you know. But this ain't one of them. There's something here, Ira. I can feel it.
Yes, I can feel it myself. Maybe we should have looked around more.
Klein looked around. Klein was the one found that tower.
Bertie, that's right. He did.
He said he didn't like it. He said it scared him.
In the morning, Bad Ears, we'll go and see that tower. In the morning, I took Doc and MacIver and Brady with me, and we walked across the valley to the stone tower. It wasn't much of a tower. Maybe 8 or 9 feet high, made of rocks piled one on top of the other.
Pretty solid. Well built and odd. Type F culture, I'd say.
Did anybody bother to look inside this thing? MacIver, you were here with Klein yesterday.
Yes, sir. We couldn't find a way in, Captain. Klein poked around but gave up.
Well, we'll make a way in. Stand back. I think I can shoot the top off it. Oh, now that should be big enough for a man to lower himself into. Okay, pass a rope around my shoulders.
Captain.
Yes?
In case there's anything, well, dangerous, maybe I ought to go. After all, I'm survey engineer.
MacIver's right, Ira.
Okay, Mac, your responsibility.
Yes, sir. Just fasten the rope under my arms.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Now, I'll climb up and lower myself in. If I pull twice, haul me out. One pull means okay. Give me a hand, Brady, huh?
How about a quick shot of whiskey first?
Never touch it. Brady.
Can you see inside?
Black as a tomb. I'm going to lower myself. Pay out a little rope. Well, it's been lovely. Here we go.
One tug. He's on the ground inside.
Yeah, I wonder what he's found.
I still don't like it.
Oh, Brady, there's probably not a thing in there except a few... There's two tugs. Three, come on, haul him out.
Brady, help him through the top.
Right. Easy now, Mac. What the heck is in there anyway? Mac?
Dada? Dada?
Holy jumping asteroids. Doc, he's flipped.
No, he hasn't lost his mind. He's just reverted to babyhood.
We stood there at the foot of the tower, stunned. MacIver sat on the ground, happy as a clam, playing with his fingers and talking happy little nonsense syllables. Doc, take a look at him. Make sure that he's okay physically.
Check. If it's fright, his pulse will be way up. Mac, let me have your hand. That's a good fellow. Now. Good heavens.
What is it?
I've forgotten what the normal pulse rate is. Pulse. Pulse?
Doc, let's get out of here. Brady, pick up MacIver and bring him back to the ship. Come on, let's get away from this tower. A few minutes later, Brady and I sat in the captain's quarters. He didn't do much talking, just sat and tipped his bottle to his lips ever so often. Well... At least we know in a general way what we're up against.
Do we?
We know there's been knowledge lost, important information forgotten.
Check.
Now, that memory, that lost skill, that knowledge went somewhere. Maybe there's something in that tower that takes it away. And I have a silly feeling we might even get it back.
Have a drink.
Bad Ears, get a couple of men, volunteers.
Now?
Now.
What for?
We're going to find out what's inside that tower. We lowered a rotating infrared movie camera into the tower, took some pictures, and went back to the ship for a look. There was something in there, all right.
Now, as far as we can determine, this thing we photographed is shaped like a watermelon standing on end. The movement of the hairs all over it suggests vibrations, such as an antenna of an insect. Underneath are wires leading to terminals that seemed plugged right into the thing.
You think it's a form of life?
My guess is a combination of living organism and machine. After all, man and machines work together. The difference is that man retains his individual identity.
Well, since it doesn't locomote, somebody or something must have put it there.
Exactly.
It looks like some kind of communication organism.
If it is, it's a communication machine that is built to take in information rather than pass it along.
Doc, do you really think that egg in there has been stealing our memory?
Why not?
Well, because it's too wild, that's why not.
It's no wilder than a lot of other things we found. Say that that egg is a device for gathering knowledge.
But there's no knowledge here to gather. I mean, how often does a ship land on an out-of-the-way melon like this?
Wait a minute, Brady. Who says that knowledge has to be collected here?
What?
I said, why do we assume that knowledge has to be collected right here on Planet Nine? We forget things back on Earth, don't we?
Good Lord.
Suppose you were some race setting out fish traps for knowledge, and you had plenty of time to gather it. Where would you put your traps? On a planet swarming with intelligent beings where the traps would be found and destroyed or their secrets snatched away? Or would you put them out on some second-rate world where nobody would ever bother them?
Good heavens, I'd pick a spot just like this.
Let me fill in this picture, Doc. I think that some unknown race is bent on trapping knowledge throughout the galaxy.
Ira, if what you say is true, if it is, then every time someone on Earth forgets something, it's because one of these eggs has drained it out of him.
Well?
It's too fantastic.
Have you got a better guess?
No.
The question is, what do we do next? If anybody gets near that egg, he winds up like some puling little baby.
You were pretty near it that first day. Did you forget anything?
How should I know? I was too pleasantly lit up on grain spirits to know the difference.
Well, the question is still, what now?
I'm going outside to think.
Ira.
Yes?
There is one thing to keep in mind.
What is that, Doc?
If those are memory traps, then there must be a way for somebody to empty them. And if we're ever going to get away from here, what's gone in has got to come out.
I stood out on the platform of the ship and tried to make some sort of pattern of it. Forgetfulness. That was the key word. All through the galaxy, in every culture, there was forgetfulness. There were lots of learned theories, of course, kinks in the brain, neuroses, data processing. But suppose they were wrong. Might it not be that forgetfulness was caused by thousands upon thousands of these memory traps planted throughout the galaxy, nibbling away at the conscious memory of all the sentient beings that lived among the stars? On Earth, a man forgets slowly because the traps are far away. But here, in their very shadow, a man forgets suddenly. And then another thought entered my mind. What kind of race had set these traps? How did they empty them? How? How?
Brady!
Huh? Where do you keep your liquor?
Not cheap.
Come on, where?
It's in my locker.
Get it out of there, all of it.
Ira...
That's a direct order.
Okay. All of it.
Is that it?
Yeah. I never thought I'd see the day when you pulled rank on me, Ira. If you confiscate this stuff, so help me, I'll never
forget. Who said anything about confiscating? That is, have you ever really hung one on? I mean, just pie-eyed drunk?
Let's see. There was once on Mars.
Was that the worst?
It was beautiful. Took me 3 days to sober up. They say I fought off the whole Galactic Patrol for hours.
Well, do you think you got enough here to get that polluted again?
I got a pretty good supply, Ira.
Well, that's good, because in 1 minute, I'm going to give you a direct order to hang on the biggest, most monstrous drunk in the entire history of the universe. But first you have to volunteer.
I volunteer?
No, not until I explain why I'm doing this.
Ira, this sort of project don't need reasons. It's a pleasure.
Let me finish. You know that egg up in the tower?
Yeah?
The minute you get near it, it grabs your mind, wipes it clean, right?
Yeah.
And a lead space helmet doesn't shield you, as we saw with MacIver.
Right.
Now, Doc thinks this egg is a kind of communications thing.
It must be.
Okay, you're a communications man. What do you do when you can't shield a communication?
Well, that's easy. You scramble it. Any fool knows. Holy mackerel.
Exactly. Are you still game?
You think it'll work?
I don't know. I think it might.
Well, suppose it doesn't.
Maybe you're babbling infant like Klein and MacIver.
If we don't stop that thing, it'll happen anyway.
Unless we can remember how to start the engines.
Okay, Ira. I'll do it. When do I start?
Right now.
Well, Ira, here's mud in your ever-loving intergalactic eyeballs. You know something? I'm beginning to like this mission already.
Well, that kills the last bottle.
How am I doing, our old buddy?
You're not drunk enough. You should have picked somebody like Doc, except he'd probably pass out.
I'm not drunk enough, huh, old buddy pal?
Not yet.
Well, then, in which case, old buddy, I'm going to have to do something I never like to have to do.
What's that?
I'm going to have to go into my extra special emergency reserve supply. It's a little supply I keep in case of getting marooned on a planet, you know? I don't like to go into it, but in this case, it's my duty. A rambling wreck from Georgia Tech, and a heck of an engineer. A rambling wreck from Georgia Tech, and a heck of an engineer. Woo! Blast off!
Okay, I guess you're ready. What do you think, Doc?
Most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Is he drunk enough?
What I want to know is what's keeping him conscious.
Okay, bad ears on your feet. Help him up, Doc.
Right.
Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Let's go, bad ears.
Right. Rambling wreck. From Georgia
Tech. Somehow we pushed, hauled, and stumbled Bad Ears Brady out of the ship and up the rocks to the egg tower. We erected a tripod over the hole with a block and tackle, passed a rope around Brady's chest, and hauled him over the entrance to the tower. There he swung like some overstuffed pig singing raucously under the eerie moonlight.
Ramblin' wreck from Georgia Tech.
Well, what do you say, Ira? You got the earphones on him so they can't slip off.
They're on.
Well, I guess we're ready to lower him.
Ira.
Yep.
You sure? It's a man's life.
I'm not sure, Doc. But as commander of this expedition, I sometimes have to risk the lives of my men. Okay, Ira.
Lower away before I start to get sober. Lower away. Blast off. Fire one. Fire two. Bon voyage, Ira.
Good luck, Brady.
Good luck. He's at the bottom, Ira.
Bad Ears, can you hear me?
Get your hands out of my hair. Something's got his hands in my hair, Ira.
Oh, the thing must be picking at his brain. Brady, listen to me. Do you see the egg?
See, that's my buddy, Ira. My little old egghead buddy. You and me buddy's egghead, right? Amateur.
Oh, good Lord, he's got a bottle with him. I'm pouring it on the egg. Brady, listen to me. The wires.
Wires?
The lead wires you took in with you.
Yeah.
Pull out the studs on the egg and hook your wires to it. You got that?
Just a minute. Me and Ager's gonna have a drink.
Oh, good heavens. It's no use, Ira. He's too drunk to know what he's doing.
I'll try again. Brady, listen. Your friend, the egg, can't hear you, see? He can't have a drink until you hook your wires into him. You got that?
Sure. That's an awful thing. That's dreadful. Okay.
What's he doing? Doc, you getting any impulses?
Not a thing.
Maybe we better haul him out. If he starts to sober up...
Maybe we'd better.
Okay, one, two...
Wait a minute.
What?
I'm getting something, Ira. What? This is fantastic. Oh, I'm getting something.
All right, haul him out, quick.
All right.
Come on.
A rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. A rambling wreck.
Brady, are you all right? Doc, help me. Take a look at him. Is he okay?
Yes, he's okay. Just passed out.
Let's get him back to the ship.
Right. You know what, Ira?
What?
Tomorrow about 9 a.m., we're going to be in on the most colossal hangover in the history of mornings after. Mm-hmm.
We were in on more than Doc Spencer had bargained for. More than any human being had any business being in on.
Oh.
Well, Brady, how do you feel?
Shoot me. You turned the trick.
Trick?
The tower.
You hooked into the egg. The stuff is rolling out now. Doc and the boys have got a recording hooked up. The stuff they're listening in on is enough to set your teeth on edge.
What stuff?
The information that mind trap has been collecting for hundreds of years. It'll take us years to sort it out, but we're getting some of it straight already.
Any of our own stuff?
Plenty.
Anything on engines?
Well, not on our engines.
So?
We got the dope on the junkyard engine. Mac and the boys are hoping to get it assembled. We're ripping out our own engines and just keeping some of the parts.
Another junkyard, huh?
Another junkyard. The engine we're building now is superior to anything ever built.
Pretty handy little gadget, that egg. Only one thing.
What's that?
Tell Doc if he comes across a good hangover remedy to let me know, huh?
Oh.
It took us about 6 days to assemble new engines using some of our parts and some of the advanced designs from the junkyard. During most of that time, Doc Spencer sat down at the tower with a set of headphones monitoring the information from the egg. He was like a man possessed. I didn't think anything unnatural was happening until the night of the sixth day. Well, that does it. The boys have got the engines ready for blastoff. There's a full moon, too.
We should be able to lift her by tomorrow morning, huh?
We're blasting off in exactly 1 minute, that is.
What?
In exactly 1 minute.
But Ira, Doc, and some of the techno boys are down monitoring that egg.
I know it.
Well, it'll take them 20 minutes to get back into the ship with all that equipment.
They're not getting back.
Huh?
I said they're not getting back.
Ira, are you nuts?
Come here, that is. I want you to take a look through this field scope. You can get a good close-up of Doc and the boys who have been monitoring that egg.
Now, wait till I get it focused.
You got them?
Yeah.
Take a close-up.
Mother in heaven.
You see why we have to leave them here?
Those faces, they're like some kind of beast. What is it, Ira? What's happened to them?
The same thing that must have happened to the crew of the last ship that touched here. The same thing that made them blast out of here in such a tearing hurry.
What?
That is, there isn't only knowledge in that thing. Those boys are monitoring something else.
Something else.
Personality, that is. They're not human anymore. They're turning alien. They were still there when the ship roared up away from Planet Nine and pointed her silver nose toward Earth. We could see them in the scopes. A group of tiny figures crouched over the recording equipment, their earphones plugged into the egg. They didn't even look up when we blasted off. They were no longer human now. They were something else. Something a million light years old. And of another world.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Junkyard, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Clifford D. Simak and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Bob Hastings, Mercer McLeod, Stan Early, and Jack Orison. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Let's visit Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 22nd of February, 1956 on NBC. That would mark author Clifford D. Simak's second of six stories contributed to the network, the first being For Dimension X, NBC's first sci-fi show with a story courtesy that was later repeated on X-1. You're listening to An Hour of Science Fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now a story from Arch Obler and his Lights Out series with an updated intro placed in the show in the 1970s in a syndicated episode. But the story within, Across the Gap, was first heard on CBS on November 3rd, 1942.
This is Mr. O. Arch Obler. Have you ever wanted to turn time backwards to a pleasanter era, back to the days long before ticking atom bombs and air pollution and the inbred madness of our cities? Now picture this in your mind. We're in the Dordogne region in France. Beside a road shimmering in the heat of the midday sun stands a large, dusty limousine. The lid to the engine is open, and a begrimed little Frenchman tinkers with the mechanism. Within the car sits an Englishwoman, Kay Stanton, my name. And next to her is Jim Brent, an American, a member of our own State Department's diplomatic corps. By the way, if you haven't turned out your lights yet, turn them out now and listen to Neanderthal.
Aren't I what, my chair?
Aren't you clever with engines?
I think I will rest a moment and talk with you. Oh, this sun. It is doing its best to fry the little brains I have left.
Poor dear. Come on, get in. Jeffrey was worried about your ability to fix the engine.
Ah, most comfortable. You should try working with your hands, my dear Jeffrey. It gives one a most exquisite appreciation of the comforts of upholstered seats.
Sorry I'm such a dud at machinery.
Now, Jeffrey, don't be so stuffy. Claude's much too primeval in his ways to be subtle. He thought you ought to help fix the engine. He'd be shouting the fact at the top of his voice.
Not at the top, my dear. But perhaps in the middle register. Oui, Kay, as usual, you are right. I lack all knowledge of the diplomatic arts. If I do not like what a man is doing, I'm forced to say so abruptly and completely. What an advantage you men of the diplomatic service have over we other poor mortals, my dear Jeffrey.
Sorry, but I'm much too warm at the moment to think you're very funny.
Oh, you too. The minute you get together, the great battle of words begins. Aggressiveness versus diplomacy. The financier versus the diplomat. As the Americans say, bury the hatchet, my friends.
I'm afraid Mr. Wallace will never appreciate my virtues. He likes men who sit around green tables and talk. I, on the other hand, do not like sitting. I do.
The diplomatic way of getting things done is the only civilized way.
And again, monsieur, I must beg to disagree. There comes a time when if a thing is to be done, one must do it. And diplomacy, how do you say it, be hanged.
The philosophy of ruthlessness. Caveman philosophy.
What do we know of cavemen?
I know that a ruthless aggressiveness may reap temporary rewards, but those rewards that have come in a far greater and more permanent form have resulted from the use of a civilized code. A friendly exchange. Calm consideration of facts. The ethical way of life.
The ethical way of life. I tell you...
All right, gentlemen. It's just about enough of that for one day.
So sorry.
A thousand pardons, my dear Kay.
Are you certain it will run, Runner?
In my simplicity, I know but one way to find out, and that is to try and start it. Voila.
Clever Claude, isn't he, Jeffrey?
Let's hope it continues to run.
Oh, charming thought. Let's be on our way, Claude, before we fall apart.
I said, Mom.
We're very late, Claude, so speed's the word.
Right. The sooner we get out of this country, the better I like it.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I don't like this place. It gives me the chills.
With the sun doing its best to parboil us. What are you talking about?
I'm not talking of temperatures. I'm talking of atmosphere. These forests and hills. Whenever I travel through here, I feel as if I were passing through a place old beyond decay.
But that is amazing.
What do you mean?
Because what you say of this country we are passing through, you speak profound truth.
Truth?
We are at Le Moustier.
Le Moustier?
Oui. Does that mean nothing to you?
Nothing.
Not to me either.
Le Moustier, the Moustierian period. The dawn of mankind. The Neanderthal man. You mean here, we?
Here.
In this country, which you say is old beyond decay, were founded Neanderthaloid skeletons, what you call cavemen, men from the dawn of man's antiquity.
Claude, are you serious?
Some of the finest specimens of Neanderthaloid skeletons have been discovered in the caves right in this region.
Really?
It is unfortunate we are in such a hurry, or we could stop, perhaps, and see a few of the caves where the excavation have been made by the anthropologists.
We haven't time for that sort of thing.
I said as much.
Claude.
So I was saying, the anthropologists have found the most wonderful remains of this early species of man, who are said to be the source of the horrible ogres in our fairy tales.
What are you talking about?
Silly nonsense.
Yes, Claude. How could anyone possibly know after 50,000 years what this Neanderthal caveman looked like?
But that is simple. From the peculiarities of the skeletons that have been found, it is simple to reconstruct the physical appearance of the race.
Really?
I remember hearing the hands and feet were very large. The thigh bones curved so that the men walked like apes. Teeth and jaws were large. Enormous brow ridges resulting in a fierce, horrible expression.
How nice.
They were men and not men. Horrible characters.
Kay, would you mind telling your erudite friend to step on the accelerator? We've got to be at Monet within 2 hours. We'll never get there at the pace he's driving.
And Kay, would you tell your impatient compatriot that I drive as fast and in a manner that pleases me alone? Would you tell him that?
Claude, look out, the road's blocked.
Don't swing your wheel, you fool. The cranking gear, something is wrong again.
The cliff!
Kay!
Jeffrey, please open your eyes. Jeffrey, please open your eyes. I'm so frightened. I don't know what.
Kay.
Oh, well, thank God you're all right.
You're all right.
Oh, yes, I'm all right, but. But Claude, I don't know where he is.
The cliff. We went over.
We were thrown clear, I guess. The car's over there. I see it all broken up. But Claude, I can't see him.
Yeah, help me up.
Oh, what is it, Jeffrey?
Oh, my arm. It's broken, I guess.
Oh, Jeffrey.
Oh, I'll be all right. I'm lucky to be alive.
I don't understand going over that horrible cliff. And Claude,
back here, in the brush.
Well, come ahead. Well, what's the matter? Are you hurt?
My knee. Kay, are you all right?
Oh, yes, Claire. All right, stay where you are. We'll come to you. We'll come to you. Don't move.
Oh.
Sorry, Claude. I have to get that new bandage.
It is all right. A little pain is better than oblivion.
Oh, sorry, I can't be of any help, old man. There's a blasted arm of mine.
It is all right, my friend. Kay is doing excellently.
How cold it is.
That wind.
Freezing.
But how could that be? In the middle of July.
Claude, Jeffrey, what is this? The car goes over a cliff, we don't die. A warm, sunny day, and now suddenly it's like winter. What is this? Tell me, what is this?
Steady.
There must be some logical explanation. I know this country, like you say, like the back of my hand. There is never such cold wind here in July. I tell you... Oh.
Claude, you shouldn't try to get up.
I'm all right.
Oh, we've got to get help somehow.
No. No. All I want now is a cigarette.
No, I haven't any. Oh, there's some in the side pocket of the car. I'll get
them. No, Jeffrey, I'll get them.
But you can't.
You can't go through the bushes with that arm of yours. I'm all right. I'll be right back.
Kay,
wait.
I'll be back in a minute.
This infernal knee.
Better sit quietly.
Quietly. It is not in my nature to be quiet. A stick. Get me a stick. I'm not going to lie here the rest of my life. Get me a stick for a crutch and I...
Wait a minute.
But I tell you...
Wait, I tell you. There's someone coming.
Kay?
No, the other direction.
But
I do not see.
There, over there to the right. There, don't you see? The bushes are being pushed back.
Yes, I see. Some peasant will give us assistance. Now everything will be all right.
Of course. Oh, there we are. He's in the clearing. Now he...
Oh. Who is that? Oh, no.
God.
Who? Am I mad? This cannot be. He's looking at me. God. Yes. But who? Who? You do not understand?
Understand what? Talk up.
Did you not see him as I saw him? The short, hairy, twisted body, the head thrust forward, the neck bent like an ape, those enormous brow ridges, the broad, flat nose. You did not recognize.
Well.
Once, in your own British Museum, I saw a reproduction of a man like that.
Huh?
But never did I think that I would see him in life.
I tell you, speak. Who was he? Who?
A man of the caves. A Neanderthaler.
Are you insane? Why, the race is extinct 50,000 years.
I tell you only what I saw, what I know.
And I tell you, you're mad.
But you saw as I did.
No.
The thick, hairy body. The short, ape-like limbs. That misshapen face like something out of a nightmare. Yes. A nightmare of 50,000 years ago. A caveman comes out of the past.
No, stop talking like that. It can't be, I tell you, it can't be. He's some madman wandering these forests, that's all. Why, cavemen died here 50,000 years ago. The past doesn't come back, I tell you, it doesn't. Why?
Claude.
Eh? Kay.
Oh.
Kay. Kay.
Kay, where are you?
Kay, where are you?
Kay!
Alistair, Kay!
Well, it's nonsense, I tell you. Hallucination.
Eh?
Yes, hallucination. Driving along, we were talking about the Neanderthal man. So when we saw that hairy peasant, we immediately took for granted that, well, here was one of the Neanderthal come to life. I tell you, the air was hazy. Our nerves were shut. We saw things that don't exist.
Why is it so bitter cold? That, at least, is reality.
Keep moving.
So, I'll answer my only question. It is bitter cold because time has moved back to the third interglacial age.
Ah!
You do not believe the evidence of your senses. Yet perhaps you will believe that that is a campfire up ahead.
It is a fire. Here, quickly, Renner. Oh, quickly. Can't you hobble faster? Kay, we'll get who's ever there to help us find Kay. Come, hurry, Renner, hurry. Hurry.
It's the one we saw, all right. Keep your voice down. He will hear us.
What manner of man is he?
Time and time again I have told you.
But he and all like him have been dead 50,000 years. You said that yourself. Dead don't come back to life.
We have come into his life, not he into ours.
Kay.
Keep your voice down.
Oh, but Kay.
She is not there. You can see for yourself.
Well, then she's lost. She's wandering around here.
Keep your voice down. I warn you.
Lunatic, savage, whatever he is, perhaps he's seen Kay.
Get down, you fool.
No, I'm going to talk to him.
Stay down, Jeffrey.
Hey, you up there. Look. We want to talk to you.
You fool. What have you done?
See, he's coming this way. I'll settle this.
Oh, you. While we were unseen, we had a chance to plan, to do. But now.
Don't talk like that. I was in West Africa for 2 years. I know how to deal with savages.
Look at him. You think there is even a savage?
He stopped. Afraid of us. He's the ugliest beggar I've ever seen. Friends, old man. See? Friends. Look, money. I bring you money. And pretty thing.
Mon Dieu, what a fool. Words of money for him. Jeffrey, look out.
Let me go, you crook.
Jeffrey.
Friends, I tell you.
Jeffrey, I can't help you. Do not try to hold back your tears, my friend.
That devil.
I never realized before what pain the human mind could endure.
But why did he do this to me? Why?
Do you ask the wolf why it kills.
Oh, killing would be one thing, but...
Once I saw a gypsy break the wings of a wild bird.
Oh, Rene. Oh.
I never thought that the time would come in my life when I couldn't reason something out.
But this is beyond reason. Thrown into a cave like a side of beef to wait.
To wait for what?
What? Oh, if I only...
Wait.
What?
Someone is coming. Ahead.
I hear nothing.
Listen. A woman. Kay.
Catherine. Is that you?
Kay. Answer.
Oh, Jeffrey. Of course.
Oh, Kay. You. Oh, Catherine, are you all right?
Kay, where were you?
No, you. Are both of you all right?
Oh, we're all right.
We don't matter. You. Are you all right?
It's so dark in here. Are you all right? Tell me.
Catherine, you.
It is you that matters. What?
No, listen. There's so little time.
Eh?
What?
He's busy building up a fire. There's a chance if we run quickly.
Run quickly?
Yes, come.
We're not at liberty to go, my dear.
Why?
A matter of broken bones.
Oh, no.
That is the way it is.
Tell me what happened. Jeffrey, you. Claude, you. Tell me what happened to us. That old... Who is he? Is he really a Neanderthal?
There is no doubt.
But men like that have been dead for centuries. How did it happen? Why are we here?
When the automobile went over the cliff, we went into another dimension of time.
What?
I don't understand.
And I, too, understand little. But can it be that events in time are static things? That everything which occurs remains in existence as life moves on further along the corridor of time?
Then you mean when the automobile went over the cliff, in some way we went back into time instead of forward?
No. No, that's impossible. Things exist when they exist. Not afterwards. No. Now, there's a factual explanation to all this.
Factual? Is not the pain of our bones fact enough? Is enough weight?
What is it?
A chant of some sort.
Why is he...
What is he saying? What?
The beginning of worship. The chant to the rising sun.
What is happening to us? Only a few hours ago. So happy, the three of us. On our way to a party.
Parties. Another age.
We've got to do something.
Strange.
What?
Only a few hours ago, I was the door. And you, Jeffrey, the calm, poised diplomat of the green table.
Stop talking nonsense! Oh. Listen. He's coming in here. For us. We've got to do something. Do you hear me? Do something. I won't die. I can't die. Do you hear me? Do something. I won't die like this. I can't.
Jeffrey.
I'm sorry. I never could endure pain.
We understand, Jeffrey.
Try not to think, dear.
All my life, I've known what to say. And now...
Oh, Jeffrey.
No. Let me talk. While I can talk, I'm a man. And I won't be a man when he gets in here.
If I had a gun.
A world of reason. That's what it was to me. And everything could be settled with reason. In a world of reason.
If I had a gun...
Everything could be straightened out at the conference table. That's what I thought. All my life it would be that way. All my life. But you see, that was because I'd never met force in all my life.
If I had a gun...
But you can't reason with unreason, can you? When you're facing brute force... Words and ethics and logic and good faith don't mean anything, do they?
If I had a gun...
You've got to face force with force. And a gun is force. And I've got a gun.
Jeffrey!
He's out of his head.
Yes, I tell you, I've got a gun. Diplomatic service.
They made me carry it. Oh, I hated it. I thought I'd never use it, but now we've got to, don't we? We've got to.
Oh, he's coming in here.
God, your right arm's all right. Police in my pocket there. The gun, use it, use it.
But I
use it if we're to live, use it.
Jeffrey, it's reaching.
Come on. Oh, my hands are, I can't. All right, then. I'll shoot it.
So,
it's morning.
We.
Now.
We go on living. Something may happen to return us to where we belong.
I don't think so.
Nor I. Perhaps we will be able to leave some record behind us so that the world of the future will know and understand this strange thing that has happened, this meeting of the present and the past.
Jeffrey, don't just stare. It's over. Talk to us.
I was thinking. I just killed a man. Yet, it's 50,000 years before I was born.
Lights Out, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 3rd of November, 1942 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.